Support for NPR podcasts comes from HBO, presenting The Wire. The final season premieres this Sunday at 9 p.m.
This podcast is a production of KCRW and KCRW.com Santa Monica. If you enjoy this program, check out KCRW.com for more than 20 additional programs that you can podcast. Support comes from the fully employed MBA program at Pepperdine University's Grazia Deo School of Business and Management. For information, log on to bschool.pepperdine.edu.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, we get ready for the year ahead with our annual look at the stories of the year just ended. From scandals to the strike to the surprise success of mega sequels, it's the Hollywood year that was. Joining us, Cynthia Littleton from Variety and Carl DiIorio from The Hollywood Reporter. Happy New Year! It's The Business from NPR. A Chinese proverb says that if you consider the past, you shall know the future. Now, whoever said that probably didn't work in show business. But it's still fascinating to look back at the year and get a picture of what we might expect in the future. And that's what we're going to do today. The biggest story might just be what a huge year it's been for celebrity gossip. 2007 was a bumper crop for Hollywood scandal. But we here in public radio are above all of that. So let's get into the real Hollywood stories of 2007 with Carl DiIorio, The Hollywood Reporter's deputy film editor, and Variety's deputy editor for news development, Cynthia Littleton.
Cynthia Littleton, Carl DiIorio, welcome to The Business. Good to see you both. So the first question I should ask is this. How little swag did you get this season? it seems like the town is bereft of excess. Is that the strike? And what did you get, or what didn't you get that you usually get?
I got, as always, the requisite throw wraparound thing. You always get one of those things. And those always come in handy when you have children, when you have, you know, cold living rooms at this time of year. So I definitely got a Warner Brothers embossed.
They're usually emblazoned with some
right.
film or whatever.
That was probably the highlight of the swag this year.
But was there a general reduction in swag, Carl?
Oh, for sure. And I think it's been a couple years in the making, but I can remember much better times than this year when my best gift was a Starbucks gift package, which is I find that sad somehow. But, you know, I'd like to get an audit on these cards that show up saying that a donation's been made in your name to some charity you never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's possible that that's true, but I'm skeptical.
And, of course, in all the green hoopla this year, the big thing was e-cards from your favorite networks and studios, which I'm all for. We don't need the blizzard of cards that you throw away.
Well, let's get to the strike. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen the Writers Guild of America make interim agreements with production companies like Worldwide Pants, which, of course, is David Letterman's production company. What do these deals mean for the strike, Carl?
Well, in terms of what they mean for the Guild, I think it's something that they can point to show that somebody out there still loves them. And, you know, probably the glib answer to why did they make these limited deals would be because they couldn't make a real deal. But the ability to point to some number of writers getting back to their jobs via this limited agreement with Letterman does let them notch one in the win column.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia, you think it's that bad that it has to be somebody loves them? Are they getting that little love?
The Letterman situation is like a gift dropped in the Writers Guild lap in terms of their strategy of putting pressure on the majors, who they really need to do a deal with to get the town back to work. Letterman is unique in primetime right now in that he owns 100% lock, stock, and barrel of the two CBS late-night shows that his company produces, The Late Show and The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. Nobody, not Dick Wolf, not Jerry Bruckheimer, nobody owns 100% of their show. Dave, in the, you know, mother of all late night deals that he did with CBS 16 years ago, got that perk of owning his show, just like Johnny did in his later years. And so here was a tailor-made situation. Dave, very big Writers Guild supporter, wanted to go back on air, wanted to be a good guy and go back on air with his writers, was in this unique situation of saying, hey, I'm responsible, I'm liable for these shows. From the Writers Guild perspective, what better way to increase the pressure on, say, NBC, whose late night franchises are a huge cash cow, the second most profitable show next to the Today Show is the Tonight Show for NBC. What better way to, as Carl said, say, look, here's somebody loves us. We're reasonable. We're not bomb-throwing anarchists. We can do a deal with somebody. And putting Dave on at full strength with his writers, with the WGA sanction that is not going to scare away A-list celebrity guests who may not want to cross a picket line to do other shows, what better way to up the pressure on NBC?
So you count this also in the win column for the writers.
Well, I don't think the long-term strategy of the Writers Guild really mystifies me. But in this particular opportunistic case, it's a big win for them. And don't forget, we're also in the throes of trying to figure out what's going on with the Golden Globes. What network is broadcasting the Golden Globes? What network is going to take a big hit if the Globes ratings drop by half or 75% if there's no celebs there because the Writers Guild is out in force in front of the Beverly Hilton? It's really the strategic, the chess moves in this have really gotten fascinating in the last couple of weeks.
So anyone want to hazard a guess? Are we going to have a Golden Globes? Are we going to even have an Oscars?
Oh, I think we'll have both. But as Cynthia suggests, the ratings won't be what they might, and therefore the advertising revenue won't be what it should be.
Mm-hmm. Because celebs are not going to want to be scabs, so to speak.
Everything we're hearing from stars and from talent reps is that celebs aren't going to cross the picket line. I think the Golden Globes will go on in some truncated form. There's speculation that they might hold the ceremony and not televise it. I think that seems like a real long shot.
Yeah, and to Cynthia's point about the stars not showing up, which they, you know, I've been somewhat bemused by the speculation over whether stars will show up at these or not. I would say there won't be a single notable star to cross a picket line if, in fact, there are Writers Guild picket lines at the Globes. I don't really think it's anything to speculate about.
Let's talk a little bit about how all of this jockeying and chess moves that you're referring to is affected by the parallel track negotiations that are going on with Hollywood's directors. The DGA is basically saying, you had till the end of the year, and now we're going to get into it. Everyone seems to think that the Directors Guild sort of drives this train. Is that true, do you think? And what do you think we can expect from the directors? Are they sympathetic to the writers?
Well, I think the WGA, whether on purpose or not, has handed the DGA the most leverage they've ever had in sitting down with the producers. And in contrast to the leadership at the Writers Guild, the Directors Guild is led by longtime industry insiders. Gil Cates doesn't get more of a you know, Hollywood stalwart than Gil Cates. The
longtime producer of the Oscars as well.
Exactly. The executive leadership of the Directors Guild has been in their jobs for a long time, done a lot of contracts. So it's going to be a much more cordial situation from the get-go when they sit down. And the interesting thing that I don't think anybody outside of the negotiating committee of the Directors Guild knows is, what are they going to sit down with? What are they going to ask for? And are they going to find a magical formula in this new media area, which has been the flashpoint of the fighting between the Writers Guild and the producers on how to compensate writers for new media?
Let's talk about television for a moment here. Cynthia, how will this strike change next season? What are we going to see differently on the dial?
Well, I mean, you know, pilot season, which normally would be in really ramping up right now, is kaput. I mean, there was a lot of accelerated production this summer, but the normal frenzy of roughly 100 pilots shot by the five broadcast networks that happens between January and April in advance of the networks unveiling their new fall schedules in May is not happening.
So for me and my Barca Lounger, though, what changes?
You're going to see a lot more reality shows. You're going to see a lot more sort of stunty, you know, 3- and 4-night event programs like ABC tried a couple weeks ago with a game show called Duel. You're going to see, you know, you might see some British and Australian imports from other, you know, some programming imported from other English-speaking countries. I mean, it's really, the cupboard is going to be bare. You will see probably some shows that are kind of struggling picked up for another year because they don't have anything else to bank on.
Cynthia, what do you think about this notion that some of the pilot activity could be shifted this summer?
Oh, that's definitely a possibility if things go back, and then you could see the 2008-2009 season really beginning in, you know, winter or spring 2009 rather than fall 2008. Yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
If you're just joining us, we're reviewing The Hollywood Year That Was with Variety's Cynthia Littleton and The Hollywood Reporter's Carl DiIorio.
Now, usually the networks roll out their big cavalcade of shows. There's a lot of sort of advertising people brought into New York to kick the tires, lift the hood, take a look at what they got. $9 billion worth of advertising gets bought there. That ain't happening, it sounds like, Carl. Is that right? And what does that mean? Is that permanent?
Well, Jeff Zucker commented that
That's the head of NBC Entertainment.
NBC Universal.
Excuse
head,
me, yeah.
Jeff Zucker said that he thought the impact of the strike on the upfront presentations, which are generally very extravagant and expensive and premised on drawing in a lot of advertising dollars, that they might change significantly forever as a result of the strike. Now, Jeff Zucker would know certainly better than I what will replace the current upfronts format. But frankly, I think even if you put a gun to his head and asked him for details, they would be wanting because we're into uncharted territory now.
Well, I'm sure we could find some writers who'd like to do just that.
The bigger question is what's going to happen to those $9 billion that are placed in that mid-May, early June period that's called the upfront when advertisers place their advance commitments for ad time in the coming season. But at this point, we're looking at, you know, when are we going to see a fresh episode of Grey's Anatomy or The Office or CSI? I mean, things are so uncertain. What you could see is a shift to what's known as the scatter market, which is much more short-term sales, which advertisers don't like because the prices fluctuate quite a bit. And in a hot market, which ironically television has been enjoying a very hot short-term sales market right now, in a hot market you could actually see the networks gaining some ground. But if they don't have Grey's Anatomy and CSI and the hits to sell, it could be very, very dicey.
So, Carl, even with the strike, the rumors of the death of the broadcast television industry, they're still kind of exaggerated, right?
I don't know. The broadcast industry died in my living room a few years ago. I'm probably a poor judge as to what is must-see TV. But in terms of the viability of the business models, they do seem to have shifted somewhat comfortably to a situation where the ratings for any single show or indeed network are not what they used to be. But the conglomerates that own the broadcast networks also have cable operations that add to their revenue pie.
Yeah, let's not forget that USA Network is actually more profitable than NBC. USA is owned by NBC Universal, but USA is a cable network which sells advertising and gets money from cable operators is more profitable than NBC, just as ESPN is more profitable for Disney than ABC. So the worm turned a long time ago, but broadcasting has that certain place in sort of the American consciousness that gives it almost an outsize influence, I think, on pop culture. I think what you're going to see long-term for the TV business is, and all the execs are talking about it, is that they, with pilot season essentially scrapped this year as we know it, you're going to see a ratcheting down of just the budgets committed to scripted development by, you know, some people are talking 20-30% minimum next year. And although it's going to be painful and it's going to be lost money-making opportunities for people, it will probably be a much-needed correction because television development is the most wasteful, the most inefficient way of going about developing pilots that at some point you know are never going to get on the air. But because you got that money in your budget and you don't want to lose it, you're going to throw the dice on something. And it's always in the hopes of, well, this thing that doesn't look very promising will be the next Seinfeld. But I think what you're really going to see is people going more to a cable model of developing fewer pilots, putting more time and energy and sweat into casting them, honing them, perfecting them. And while, again, less opportunities for writers and cinematographers and below-the-line people, in the long term, if it helps cut a lot of the fat out of the TV business, it could be a good thing.
We're talking about the year that was, and I wanted to sort of touch on the year that that wasn't as well as the year that was. And that was, you know, the predicted sequel logjam. This was the year of three. Pirates of the Caribbean 3, Shrek 3, Spider-Man 3. We're out of ideas.
Harry Potter 15.
Yeah, Harry Potter 35. These movies didn't really lead to audience burnout.
Well, the numbers, the final official tallies are just in, and it appears there was even a modest uptick in ticket sales this year. That's not often the case in recent years when inflation through ticket price increases has set a new record in box office and revenue, but not necessarily translated into more tickets being sold. This year, more tickets were sold than any year since 2004. And so the dire warnings of sequelitis, that moviegoers would be sick to death of certain film franchises and, you know, third time would not be charming, proved not to be true.
So domestic box office, from what I understand, is up 5%. But 2007 will also be the first year that DVD sales actually decline. I'm wondering if you think, if either of you think, that if the studios hadn't so badly screwed the pooch on high-definition DVD, that we might have seen things go differently.
I am so not a believer in the promise of high-definition video. I think the DVD slowdown is a big part of the malaise of the biz right now. I think the DVD slowdown, probably as much as the strike, is a big part of the slowdown in swag during December. And there is a lot of concern about it. There's just a sense that maybe they just primed the pump too much or it's just a natural plateauing, just as we saw with home video, just as we saw with the CD format and music. I mean, how many times can you ask America to buy a new edition of The Wizard of Oz? I think, unfortunately, Hollywood banked on the DVD gravy train just growing and growing and growing and not realistically seeing that it was going to plateau at some point.
So the follow-up question to that is this. If DVD is nowhere near the cash cow or golden goose that it once was, does this mean we will see an end to profligacy in Hollywood movie making? Are we going to see more discipline applied to making movies?
Didn't they say that after Cleopatra in 1961?
Yeah, and I think that's a big negatory.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, the hedge funds are still, you know, circling the horizon as we speak.
And it's a $10 billion business or more. I mean, it's not that it's going away. It's just that it's not the growth rates are not as dramatic right as we'd see.
Now, Carl, you said the H word, hedge fund. I'm wondering, is the sort of, you know, huge inflow of investment capital that's been streaming into Hollywood, is that going to start to slow in 2008?
Well, you know, the hedge funds are still around and I think will be, and Hollywood will find some source of dumb money, as they inelegantly like to call it. But I think absolutely it will be slowed because very few of the hedge fund-driven financings have turned out to be the windfalls that their backers were hoping.
So if investment capital from hedge funds suddenly implodes or evaporates, or these guys all jump out of windows on Wall Street, does that mean the movie studios will have to be more judicious with their money?
Probably. I mean, you've already seen studios like Disney make the conscious, concerted effort to pare down their slate and focus on fewer releases that are more in their, you know, in Disney's case, more in their family-friendly wheelhouse. There may be films that would be greenlighted if, you know, half of the cost could be picked up by a hedge fund slate deal that may not be greenlighted. But the question of, you know, are you still going to see the $200 million tentpole blockbuster? I think they're still going to make those bets. And I think there'll be another source of dumb money coming down the pike.
After a short break, gaming, the internet, and Hollywood gone green on The Hollywood Year That Was with The Hollywood Reporter's Carl DiIorio and Variety's Cynthia Littleton. You're listening to The Business from NPR. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We're reviewing The Hollywood Year That Was with Variety's Cynthia Littleton and The Hollywood Reporter's Carl DiIorio. The gaming business was a big story in 2007. Video game revenue through October shot to $10.5 billion, a 49% increase over 2006. And that was without the expected release of the latest Grand Theft Auto, one of the biggest titles ever.
Is Hollywood finally considering gaming a major competitor, and how will it be monetized?
Well, I think, you know, you've seen over the past few years, studios have been investing more and more. Some of the majors have bought hot developers. I think what was interesting in the video game business, which is no question is on fire right now, is that you saw a lot of consolidation in the video game business. EA bought some Electronic Arts, the big kahuna in video gaming, bought a couple of smaller companies. You saw mergers on a smaller scale of companies that, of course, I can't summon to mind right now. But there was a lot of consolidation in that business. And I just think it's interesting to see, you know, what's that about? Is the video game business getting so big and now, you know, dare I say it, mature, that you're seeing the kind of consolidation that you've seen in other media in, you know, the past 20 years? It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that affects the marketplace, the product, the traditional sort of freewheeling atmosphere of video game developers.
Carl, let me turn to you for a moment and change the tune, if you will, to music. PricewaterhouseCoopers says that in 2008, people will spend more on gaming than on music. Now, that's partially because there's so much piracy in music, and you can just sort of steal whatever you want these days. But in fact, 2007 was the worst 12-month period the music industry has ever seen. Piracy, as we mentioned, being one of those reasons. What's the music industry going to do this year to stem the tide?
You got me. I have to say, I think the big problem has been the return to what music industry people like to call a singles business. Oh, it's a singles business again, you know. And this has happened over now many years, and it's become entrenched as a consumer instinct. And how we get back to a time where, A, youthful consumers care about an artist's output of the album, long playing variety, and B, cares to pay for that album, I don't know. And it seems like nobody in the business knows. Warner Brothers didn't sell off Warner Music for no reason. It's a lousy business anymore. And what we're talking about is the death of the recording industry, not the death of the music industry. A lot of the positive energy has shifted to the concert scene. And some of the up-and-coming acts will be entrepreneurial in various new media ways and sell their albums over the internet.
Or give them away in the case of Radiohead.
And shift a lot of the attention and also stimulate a lot of the interest by touring incessantly. And this has given rise, of course, to the era of the $5,000 concert ticket. But that's where the money is.
But what was the top tour of last year? The Police. A reunion act, and it's geezers of our age and older that are driving the concert business.
Well, at $5,000 a pop, you better have a 401k. Let's get to media ownership for a moment. You mentioned Warner's selling Warner Records, that it's a lousy business. There was supposed to be a lot of merging, a lot of buying, a lot of selling of media companies in 2007, and not a lot of it happened. A lot of talk about NBC Universal was finally going to be discharged from the land of nuclear submarines and locomotive turbines and whatnot at General Electric. That didn't happen. What will happen in the near future? Or has the business fundamentally shifted since all these for sale signs were supposedly going to show up?
I think you're going to see next year a continuation of what you could call deconsolidation. After the 80s and 90s of bulking up, I think you've seen a lot of the major conglomerates shedding assets here and there, nothing too huge, but I think they're all trying to focus in a bit more on their core. the idea that, ginormous is better. I mean, look at AOL Time Warner. That's the biggest, you know, that's the biggest sort of white elephant that, proves the fallacy of the theory that you, if you own everything from soup to nuts, from production to distribution to every aspect of the exploitation, that you're gonna prosper. The big example of deconsolidation is the split up of Viacom and CBS Corp. That was Sumner Redstone telling Wall Street, forget what I told you 5 years ago. These companies will do better if they each can sort of hone their own discrete, distinct media sector niche. And I think that's an interesting trend because, again, it's like, forget what we told you 10 years ago. We need to focus in on our core. I think you'll see some deconsolidation. I'm reluctant to go out on a limb, but what the heck. I do think you'll see Time Warner deal in some way with AOL next year. I don't know if those two at the end of 2008, if those two will be as, you know, it'll still be a wholly owned Time Warner subsidiary.
Carl, let me ask you, in terms of the web, how scared of Google should big media be?
Well, I don't think Rupert's gotten the decentralization memo because he scooped up MySpace on the premise that he needs one of them big new media suckers.
Yeah, I mean what do you think the prescient question Hollywood should be asking is about the web?
I don't think anybody in Hollywood really believes that the web is a replacement distribution system for broadcast TV networks, cable networks, a replacement for going to the movie theater or going to buy a DVD. I think it's additive. They see it as an augment to what they're already doing in the old-fashioned, old traditional businesses. That's honestly what I think in 2008. Will it be that way in 2015? I don't know.
We mentioned at the start of this that e-cards were piling up and clogging your inboxes as a means to sort of save what little remains of the environment. Let me ask you fundamentally, this was a year of the greening of Hollywood. You guys think that there's any chance at all Hollywood can really meaningfully go green? I mean, it just seems like production is in and itself a polar cap melting enterprise, and it always will be so. Is this window dressing, or what do you make of Hollywood going green in 2008?
Boy, I'm a skeptic on this one. I think it makes for good PR in one news cycle for the studios who, studio by studio, are rolling out these supposedly going green programs. And you know what? I think it's good stuff that they're doing, and I think businesses of all sorts, more quietly than Hollywood studios perhaps, are taking similar steps. But I don't know. When I have an email show up in my queue and I open it up and at the bottom it says, save the environment, don't print this out. I want to say like, hello, newsroom, what is it about news release you don't understand?
Well, my favorite was getting a press release from Comedy Central earlier this year that promised that one of their celebrity roasts, the Flavor Flav celebrity roast, was a carbon neutral event. I just, you know, screamed bloody murder and blogged a really snarky item about it. But I, you know...
Well, with the amount of hot air coming out of that thing, I don't see how it possibly couldn't affect global warming.
On its face, though, it can't hurt. And I think that on the level of the kind of propaganda that they're using, it's a small contribution, but it's better than the alternative.
We got to leave it there. We'll leave with something from Flavor Flav. Cynthia Littleton is deputy editor for news development at Variety. Carl Diorio is deputy film editor at The Hollywood Reporter. Cynthia, Carl, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you,
Claude.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.